Hello and welcome everyone to the Anti-Fragility Social Business and Digital Transformation Webinar. We're so happy to have you here today. This is Barry Bettman with SIAL here and Ross Girardi. And I'm going to kick it over to Sai to introduce and get our panelists started. Good morning, Sai.
How are you, Barry?
Well, thank you so much. So tell us about our tremendous speakers and panelists today.
Most definitely. We have three panelists today, definitely some of the most formative thinkers, if you will, in the digital space. I think definitely I've observed the shaping from my perspective and how they have contributed to the space, and likewise their contributions beyond that around anti-fragility and in terms of what that concept means and is interpreted and how it unfolds. We are definitely very eager to get into. With that said, I'm going to definitely invite them in to introduce themselves. And by all means, the first one, most definitely, the impact is tremendous, and I can't overemphasize the impact that these folks have had, both in my world, the clients that I work with, and across the globe, is David Cushman. So, David, would love to hear from you, my friend.
Thank you very much. Thanks for sparing us the time to access your audience and talk with you. My name is David Cushman. I have been involved in this kind of strange world of digital and what it might mean for the way the world changes probably since around 98, 99 with any kind of seriousness. I have a background in traditional media. I worked in magazines and newspapers and ended up becoming a digital development director for Bauer Media. It got me into a world in which I could see the threat to media from peer-to-peer publishing. I started creating all sorts of interesting things that were essentially blogging platforms before we knew what blogging was, really. And then I ended up working in social media for a period. I got quite frustrated with how quickly, when you work in social media, it tends to lead to conversations about messaging and what you can do to customers. And I always felt there was much more to this story. There was much more about how what the web does changes the way we organize and how that change in organization changes the way in which the world works. I thought that there was a much bigger story to tell. So over the years, as you mentioned, I've written a couple of books. One was really just a collection of my what I thought were more interesting blog posts, and that one's been out a good few years now, called The Power of the Network. And the more recent one is on Palgrave Macmillan, and that's called The 10 Principles of Open Business. And that was developed after a period in which I worked with Jamie Burke, my co-author on that. We set up a consultancy in what we called Open Business, which was our take on, I guess, what everyone was maybe calling social business at the time. We saw some important distinctions, and we took our thinking to some big blue chips and actually got them to give us money and started creating products and services and imagining things that we were essentially creating right at the cutting edge. Nothing we had was from a stock back catalog. We had to create new stuff all the time. So it was a really interesting period, and from it came those 10 principles of open business, which we're now sharing with the world. I then moved on to work back with a really interesting social media agency in the UK called the Social Partners, which are part of WPP, and for my money, one of the only agencies in our part of the world that really get it. And then I was very lucky in that, I don't know whether you guys are aware of Ted Shelton. Ted's written some interesting books. He's been involved in some interesting businesses. He set up a thing called The Conversation Group many years ago, and also set up a thing called Open First. And he sold his business into PwC. And after a period, I guess, of earnout, he ended up being headhunted into Cognizant Technology Services, which is where you will find him to this day. And when he found himself there, he reached out to me and made it sound a very interesting place for me to come and try to make open business happen with very large organizations too. So that's what I'm doing now. I've been at Cognizant for the last year and a half. I'm leading a practice that's focused on Maximizing Digital Customer Experience at its simplest, but it is all about building trust through being open, through creating different kinds of relationships with customers that are much more focused on partnership, doing things together rather than doing things to customers. I'm just personally, I work in London, I live in Cambridgeshire, and I'm married with one lovely daughter.
Thank you so much, David. Anne would love to hear your voice, and please share who you are with the world, if you will.
Thank you, Si. It's lovely to be on this podcast, and let me just say hello to everybody listening. My name is Anne McCrossan. I've been involved in digital business in depth since I started Visceral Business in September 2008, but I began my involvement with technology and digital business a lot earlier in 1984 when I was a green stick just starting my career. And one of the very first things that I did was launch Apple in the UK. So that was quite an interesting experience because it was all about Apple breaking into a market that didn't get what it was about. It was the very epitome, if you like, of an anti-fragile type of business, which was encouraging people to think differently. And when I had an Apple Mark II in my office and it cost £5,000, and I found out later from reading the autobiography that I had mine before Mick Jagger's, which was quite a thing. But using the Mac Paint program and using something as simple as the graffiti spray can that you could draw around on a screen, it became pretty evident to me pretty early on that this was just going to change the way we thought about business and did business. After that, I spent quite a few years at Saatchi & Saatchi and then 7 years at WPP heading up the client services for a company called the Brand Union, which involved doing quite a lot of large-scale organizational restructuring around the core essence of a business, its identity, its brand, and how it takes itself to market. So I've been working with what you might call the intangible assets of businesses for quite a long time, since about 1997, 8, when we were really looking at the emergence of the knowledge economy and we were thinking about what people buy into at a level which is not necessarily just about hard fixed capital assets. And that was perhaps something which began to start this conversation that we're having now about, are we still living in an industrial age, or does the digital age change the way we really think about how we do business, what doing business can be, and how organizations calibrate themselves to cope with this change that digital business modeling has brought in. And the point, I suppose, of calling Visceral Business was I really wanted to communicate that this is a different, much deeper type of way of working in business, very much about the connectivity that digital brings to our economies in terms of the relationships and the interactions we have with consumers or stakeholders or staff or people who are just interested, actually, and who don't have a direct consumption relationship, but who may become advocates or partners. You know, when we think about Google as a distributed network, for example, we're definitely seeing a new kind of organization that has emerged over the last 10 years. So the work I do now falls into two types of areas. One is very large scale macro studies of sectors as a holistic approach to looking at the dynamics of how digital business is changing the way we work and trade. And I do those studies in areas like food and charity work and housing. So areas that meet fundamental human need, that's what I'm personally interested in. The other aspect of the work is I'm very interested in putting digital leadership skill into organizations, having spent quite a lot of time myself on the agency side. I think part of what this shift is about is a new type of agency, and that is the agency of people who make the organization what it is, because that is going to be key to looking at adaptive, dynamic organizations. So a Visceral Business I would describe as having five main attributes. Firstly, that it's networked. It's seamless, it's open, it's compelling, which I think is really key because attention is a currency online. And so to be able to be compelling as well as credible. It brings a richness in terms of the dynamic of the relationship, which perhaps we didn't have before. And then there's this other aspect of it, which is about being beyond purely a profit motive. If an organization is just simply transacting and not having a bigger reason that people buy into it, I think today it's harder to create a sustainable, viable, and cost-efficient, lean way of connecting with people. So that's the area that I work in now. It's really helping organizations reframe what they do around what are new principles, but also perhaps business opportunities that might not have been on the radar before.
Well, thank you so much, Anne. Welcome from the UK.
Thank you.
And let's go over to Todd. Hi, Todd. Welcome, and please introduce yourself.
Thanks very much, Barry, and very appreciative of being invited to be on this panel by Sai to be able to participate today and talk about one of my favorite topics, digital transformation, and how it relates to anti-fragility is something that's been on my mind quite a lot lately. My background is I have spent my most recent years within the digital agency world with Seven Summits based here out of the Midwest in the United States. And I've actually just joined an organization called Feverbee, which is based out of the UK in Anne's neighborhood. We were just swapping some stories in the green room about some people we know in common over there. But Feverbee is an organization, as well as Seven Summits, are organizations that are very concerned with creating sustainable, thriving online communities. And so I've had the benefit of working with some both large global brands as well as some startup or organizations just getting off the ground that are thinking about ways to transform their business using some of these digital and social technologies. And in particular, some online collaboration platforms that are either geared towards the customer. So these become places where customers can kind of air their thoughts and ideas, complaints or praise around products and services for an organization. Maybe even have those things adopted, maybe even be able to support each other and defray some of the costs of that, phone line support model that seems to be caught up in so many organizations, or internally focused, creating those kinds of online community experiences for employees, and that's really the orientation that I originally came from. In my career before working in the digital space specifically, I really started out as a recruiter within the information technology domain. And I ended up spending a lot of time working with a lot of these nascent social networks, such as LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook, as they started coming into play a little bit more in the early 2000s. And my interest there was really sparked with some work that I had been doing in some early online communities, bulletin board type communities for game development or organizations. And in some of the ways that remote workers were interacting in those spaces, and then as some of the more commercial social networks came into play, particularly LinkedIn, I became a very much a proponent and advocate for using these tools to change the way that business gets done, to substantially open up the ways that they happen to derive value out of these networks, and to change out of some of those siloed, isolated approaches that that can be crippling to a network's productivity or an organization's long-term survival. So those are some of the topics that are near and dear to my heart. I'm very interested in interacting with both Anne and Dave and Ross and you, Barry, on the call today, and of course, Sai. I'd say if I had sort of a central thesis, for how I look, my career and the work that I try to invest in, it's really about creating engaged networks of people and how social tools can help transform the way those relationships work online. So with that, I'll turn it back to you, Barry, and let's go ahead and kick off.
Okay. Thank you, Todd. Thank you, Anne, and thank you, David. We got a really great comprehensive insight into each of you. We're going to introduce the leadership team briefly, and then we're just going to get into it. So, Ross, tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm going to just be very brief and just say that we do management consulting. We work primarily in the world of culture and also executive coaching. And I really just want to welcome our guests today. And my usual focus is on, from an anti-fragility perspective, is around leadership. And but I think this particular topic is just amazing. So I can't wait to get started.
Okay, thank you so much, Ross. And this is Barry Bettman. I'm the executive producer of this program, along with working with Cy and Ross to bring this series to everybody. Also an executive coach, do a lot of culture work, and love anti-fragility, love the way it's beginning to just unfold through these panels and out into the world. Cy, tell us about yourself, and then let's get into this.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Barry, and welcome to all the panelists. All around, my interest is human nature and in every aspect that we come in contact with it. That's my interest all around. And with that said, as you said, Barry, let's dive into it and let it unfold, if you will. So I will kind of just briefly kick us off and turn it over to the panelists to go from there. But we're interested, if you will, in definitely getting your perspective, if you will, David, Ann, and Todd, relative to social business and digital transformation. Just the degree of perspective there, and anti-fragility from how you've interpreted it, how you've detected it, where you see it, and where you think this is all going. So who would like to chime in, please?
Well, that's a huge amount to consider in one snap answer. I'm going to try to break it down a little bit if I can. My perspective on social business, I referred to it a little earlier. I have a slightly different take. I talk about open business. And so maybe I can make a distinction between social and open business. And that's in three simple things. So social is about tools. Open is about behaviors. Because often social business conversations focus on implementing software. And open business urges you to think about behaviors first. What are people doing? What can they do? What will they do? And I worry that if you start with the tools, you're going to start in the wrong place. I think social is much more about messages, and the clue's in the word media. Open is much more about production. So open businesses urge you to consider ways of making things with the people for whom they are intended, for the best possible fit with real need. And that's for efficiency and for results that people care about. Messages are an outcome of that process, not its purpose. So if you talk social, I think all roads will lead you back to messages. So again, that's one where I'd want to stay away from it. And thirdly, social is customer-centric, while open makes partners of customers. And I think the difference is that we need to stop thinking about people as customers. Customers are people you intend to do things to. Open business urges you to think about the long-suffering customer as a partner to work with. So it pushes those people deep into the production process, right to the start of it, to join with and be supported by the organization in delivering the things that all parties want. So that's and interestingly, I think someone asked me today whether I was doing anything very interesting in social media at the moment. And I had to pause long and hard. And I said, you know what? It's not really on my agenda. People aren't talking to me about social at the moment, but they are talking to me about digital transformation. I think there is a sea change in the focus at the moment. I think digital has caught the imagination of big business. They all understand that they need to digitally transform. In many cases, they fear or they feel that that is simply about doing what they do to customers already faster and more efficiently. And what we try to do with our approach to digital transformation is to make them pause and think. So I have some tools and some workshops that I use around resetting, getting people to think, and that's the purpose of the book, actually, is to, well, how would you rebuild your business if you started from where the world is today and knew what you know about how the world has changed as a result of everything digital that's impacted on it? The chances are you wouldn't rebuild it exactly as you're seeing it in front of you. And so for me, that's much more getting to the nub of what digital transformation is about. And we have to be careful that we don't just turn into deliverers of more efficient, faster technical ways to do the same old things to customers. I'll stop at that point and let someone else have a go.
Well, this is Todd. I'll jump in, and then maybe Ann can do the follow up on this round. My view around social transformation, social and business transformation using digital tools, I think it's got to include that element of tools. I would absolutely agree with David. I think that there's far too much emphasis on the implementation of tools. The organizations. Of social or online community implementation, the focus has absolutely been on the technology in far too many cases, instead of opportunities to change the ways that people work. And I think there's an interesting study that came out pretty recently. I think it was from Deloitte, and the headline of the piece was "Strategy, Not Technology, Drives Digital Transformation." I don't know that I'm fully on board with calling it strategy, but I like David's approach to it better, that the whole idea of it being behaviors needing to drive those changes. What are the things that an organization is trying to do to empower its employees to get work done, to be able to create joyfully? I think to Ann's point, talking about creating those means of delighting or creating compelling kinds of experiences. What are the ways to kind of break down barriers and those largely false barriers between departments within organizations to be able to more fully network them? I think McKinsey talks about sort of the fully networked organization, in the same kinds of ways. And then from the customer standpoint, and David, I'll take care not to use the word customer too much here, but this convenient nomenclature, for the time being. But that whole idea of tearing down that barrier between what's internal and external to the organization, there needs to be better ways. In a digitally transformed enterprise, my feeling is that the distinction between customer, partner, and internal employee becomes far, far less important than the outcomes that enterprise is trying to drive in the final view of things. So as I start thinking about what that digitally transformed organization is, it means it's on a journey towards transparency, towards being more integrated, more collaborative, more searchable, and where the leadership is much more omnidirectional and agile in its approach, meaning that we're not dealing with a command and control kind of culture so much as an organization where, and I'm not saying there's no CEO, but the CEO is not the grand hero of the story. They may be able to express a vision, but then maybe that individual needs to step aside, while the most logical people in the organization who have the subject matter experience to make something happen, step in and take that over. I view, that digital transformation as, definitely a process, one that's an ongoing one. Likewise, think about it in terms of the ways that, we talk about tribal leadership as well. There are different levels of that, and it can vacillate, back and forth over time. Something that needs to be worked towards, but is definitely a worthwhile goal.
So, Todd, picking up on that point about Amy wrapping this up, but also I think what you were saying about agile relates to what's come out of the concept of anti-fragility for me, which is the key thing, I think, is when it talks about the fragilistas, and you might like this, Si, from your human nature interest mm-hmm. perspective. He talks about the fragilistas as a body of people that struggle and will struggle with the whole concept of anti-fragility. And the fragilistas, it's in the word that there is this sense of not necessarily ready for the shock to the system that a changing paradigm brings. So from the work that I do at Visceral Business, we look very much at the organization as using, for example, digital and data as a central nervous system. And the fragilistas are, of course, not remotely familiar or used to this. We've had an industrial age, which is very much about the conveyor belt factory divisionalized organization, where machines hate cogs getting out of place because it throws the whole thing into disarray. And, you know, one might say that the emergence of a class deemed in the book to be fragilistas is perhaps a consequence of this, because I think he's right to talk about resilience being a denial of sorts. That to say that one is very resilient denies the fact that sometimes the data isn't necessarily telling us what we want it to, and that there isn't such a thing as year-on-year ROI indefinitely, and that maybe a really connected digital intelligence and nervous system within an entire networked organization. I agree with you, Todd, that's and David, it's very much about the people who connect to the business as much as the business itself. But that we can become, if you like, thinking about strategy as a means of creating more teachable organizations. So there is this form of logic that comes out of end-to-end data enablement, which helps us deal with differences in market conditions, new competitors, different consumer user needs, whatever it is, in a less fragile way. And that's the key to it for me, I think, is helping organizations develop that capability.
Very, very beautifully said across the board. It's interesting, the fragilistas, as you mentioned, Anne, and the denial of shock and what have you, and the word partnership has come up, the word dynamics. I'm just taking note of all the sharing that's going on, going to human nature, the partnership, thinking differently, calibration, network, community, et cetera. From your perspectives, as you've encountered this, I'll say, in the wild, what are some of the things that you do explicitly to foster achieving greater anti-fragility with the folks that you work with and in the social media and transformative space?
Shall I kick off with that if it kind of runs on from the people perspective, if that's useful to you, Sai?
Most definitely. It begins and ends with the people. Are there specific characteristics that you folks begin to look for as you experience and as you interact with people and really begin to gauge how much of a digital transformation can unfold and how social an organization might be or what have you?
Absolutely. It goes to the core of the work that I do. So I do a lot of mentoring in groups and also with leaders on one-year programs. And what I'm always looking for is the ability to question, if you like, some of the conditions that are part of business that they're involved with today, because this ability to reframe business, it sounds new, and a lot of people think that it's an element of digital transformation, which is what makes all of this so big and important and also scary. But in my professional career, this is all part of how organizations look at how they are strategically positioned, if you like, to do what they have as their purpose to do. So it's been the case for decades that organizations review where they're at and say, right, so we're here today, where do we want to be tomorrow? Where might we go? How might we inform ourselves about the best ways to do that? I look for people that are thinking that way, you know, about the next chapter. There's a light behind their eyes as in terms of what can I do that's new that will make a difference to the organization. And so, you know, this is about, to a level, micro entrepreneurship. You know, we're looking at granular organizations and free agent nations and much more transient workforces and all of these things. So I think a big part of the practice that we bring to organizations is to help people think on their feet with the data around them, knowing what they need to have is maybe what they don't have, and how they can become initiators of change, both at the level of their own personal focus, but also through connecting other people with a micro-entrepreneurial attitude.
Yeah, I love the word use of entrepreneurial. Definitely. Please, David, do.
Yeah, sorry. It's just some thoughts that Anne's prompting. I once sat in a pub in London with sitting opposite a guy who is literally a guru, not one of us who pretends to be in some sort of subject. Literally a proper full-on kind of levitating guru guy. And and he said to me, we were talking about the web, and I said something like, the web reveals to us how connected we have always been. And he jumped up and he pointed at me and said, that's it. That's it. And, you know, there is a real truth in that. For us to understand that what's going on here is the web is revealing a truth of humanity to us, which is that we are all connected one way or another. Now, what I find really interesting about this is that when I went to speak to, the big chiefs in large organizations a few years ago, I'd have been probably, I'd have just confused them mostly. Today, I think there's much more of a sense of understanding. I think the actual impact of the web in revealing to each and every one of us, through perhaps our use of social media, perhaps the simple things that they do every day in connecting to their friends on the other side of the world, or whatever it is, it's seeping into our souls. We're getting it collectively as a species that, you know, what we do in one place has an impact on another place. And, you know, this prosaically actually played out for me last week. I went on a training course. Now I'm 49 years old, and when I said to my father that I was going on a training course, he said, what can they teach you? I said, well, there's always stuff to learn. And I went on this course, which was really just about helping other people succeed, helping you to help other people succeed. And the simple message that came through to it, through all of it, was dare to care about the other person. Dare to care about their needs. Serve their needs. Serve them. Forget about yourself. Now, which is, I think you're seeing that in conditions like the ideas of leaders who are servers rather than leaders who feel that the organization is there to serve them. So you are there to do service to your organization. Now, all of these things were just not on the radar before the web came along. And I wonder whether the actual activity of connecting is revealing that visceral truth that Anne would refer to, is among us, is becoming real every day. And I'm finding these kind of conversations much easier to have now. You know, people understand that there is much more value outside an organization than there is inside the organization. They're much more selective about what they really have to keep private and secretive anymore versus what they can get more value from sharing, etc. So I think, you know, I'm very positive about the way this is going and the amount we are going to be able to actually and actively transform. And it's not going to be led by people at the front. All we are going to do is enable people to think slightly differently. It's the Steve Jobs of this world and their like that have led the way in this, and allowing people to think that they can act differently and still succeed.
So I would just add my voice to David's around sort of that conversation is an easier one to have now. Back when I was still working in recruiting back in the early 2000s, I was for good or for ill, I had become a bit of an advocate for the use of LinkedIn as a means of finding and connecting with the right talent to bring into an organization and help them kind of change their ways of recruiting and getting new people engaged within an organization. And I was invited by my company at the time to give an overview of the network and how that worked. And I still distinctly remember, and the COO of that organization takes great delight every time I meet him, reminding me of, hey, you remember back when you did that conversation, we were all ready to throw rotten tomatoes at you because we were so afraid that that all of our sales and recruiting networks would be opened up and our competitors would be able to eat our lunch for us instead. Today, I think that many more, I'm not going to say all, but many more companies get it, that approach with open leadership and less sensitivity to or fear around the use of social tools and networks to accomplish work is seen more as a competitive edge if done well than rather as something, you know, to be feared. You know, however, that being said, you know, where I have, you know, encountered this in practice and where, you know, when I've worked with customers, the kinds of things that often throw red flags, you know, for me, are organizations that are driven by, you know, fear and lack of trust. A customer community that gets opened up to customers, but they don't want them to be able to post anything. Organizations that are just overly reliant upon email and BCCing everybody, you know, doing the blind copy on an email, you know, so that others are kept in the loop. You know, whereas there's the opportunity to do things on a more open, social, collaborative kind of platform. These things are always, you know, markers, you know, for me and signs that there needs to be a deeper cultural and behavioral transformation, you know, before, you know, the use of any of these tools is even going to be possible. There is a baseline of trust that has to happen, both from an executive leadership standpoint, as well as, you know, organizationally. I think that, you know, I think there's a good argument to be made that this isn't just, you know, the CEO and the executive team saying, yes, it's a great idea to become a more open digital company. It's got to be believed and adopted by middle management, and those behaviors need to be modeled from both the top and the middle before I think those of us that, you know, are in the ranks and, you know, the worker bees are going to feel free enough and safe enough to collaborate across organizational departments and silos that may have existed previously. So those for me are some of the markers that I'm usually looking for when I go in and work with organizations. You know, as David and Anne have mentioned, it sounds like they've encountered very similar sorts of situations.
There's an underlying theme of humanity, definitely, to the conversation. And looking at it, I love the word care specifically, and the openness and sort of. Would you folks consider that in what we're experiencing around the social media space and what anti-fragility ultimately emerges from is a degree of humanity, kind of returning to our, I want to say, origins almost in some capacity, and helping people recognize that we're more human today than we've ever been?
I think there is an argument to say that the kind of whole industrial capitalist complex took away some of the things that we like to think of as human, and, you know, made us potentially more competitive against each other than we should have been. And, you know, there's a, you know, we're far from being correct. If I think history will judge us quite badly, actually, in the last, if you look to a globe in which, you know, a third of us are overfed and a third of us are starving to death, and we didn't lobby our governments every day to do something about that. Well, you know, history's not going to look kindly on that. Why didn't we do more about that? Now, I think a world in which we are more connected reveals that potentially we can. I remember thinking when there was one of the G8 summits, some such, and it was about global warming, and it was the last chance saloon once again, and once again, there was no agreement between governments to do anything reasonable or sensible. And I thought at the time, you know, if we ourselves want to do something about this, we could, for example, very simple, organize ourselves and let's all switch off one light bulb across the planet now and see what difference that makes, and then do another thing. And, you know, we have the tools at our disposal now to organize around the things we care about. And that's all that the future organization is it's a platform for bringing together people who care about the same thing and to lower the cost of action for them to make that happen, because they can now connect globally in a way that they couldn't before. So we can do that. I think we're still just, you know, Clay Shirky would say, we're still in the kind of gin drinking period. We're still at the look at the funny cat on the internet period. Not really understanding how much value we can create for ourselves with this amazing tool, this amazing connectedness. Once we do, we'll start building the new institutions of this new era, the new ways of doing things. I don't see that happening just yet. I think we're probably 10 years into a 20-year journey where we're seeing lots of distress for many traditional organizations, the way they organize and their business models. But we'll see that distress spread to government institutions. Yeah, for the likes of even how policy is made is still very archaic and doesn't make use of the connectedness of this world that we're in now. Yeah, there are certain politicians who would make change to that. But for all of the rhetoric so far, we've not really seen it on a much better fit policy to need basis on small scale activity versus national activity. We've not seen any of that happening yet. So there's a journey we are on, and at the moment there is still quite a long way to go, but I think if you draw the lines into the future, you can see a place where we don't have to rely on the centre to make change, and nor should we. We have to make those changes for ourselves. You know, we at the edge, we the I guess the anti-fragile, if you like. I always liked the edgelings term that Stowe Boyd came up with to represent we are the people at the edge of the network. And those people at the edge of the network actually are the people who should be making a difference. We are connected. We can make the change. The thing in the node in the middle is just an organizing platform.
So, picking up on that and your question, David, about humanity. Yes, I would say that there is an opportunity for higher level tech and higher level humanness. But the real thing, I think that's important, and I'm going to give a shout out to Monica Hardy with this, because Monica's tweeting and she's an educationalist. And I think the real thing is about education. You know, if I bring perhaps the anti-fragile element of this conversation into the room, the difficulty I think that we have is how we've been schooled to conform. I was speaking to somebody today who was telling me about looking at educationists in London and how the streaming of children going through school happens at a very early age. They're streamed and they are taught to aim for a set outcome in everything that they do. And if we don't start to think differently about that, I think we're really short-circuiting the potential and the power and the value that digital transformation can bring us, because the alternative to the curriculum, box-ticking, educational, point-scoring system that we have now, which is all about getting to the one right result, the alternative is to look at data much more dynamically and to look for organic ripple effects, to look at where people are connecting, to look at what are the seeds of organic opportunity that we could not necessarily have predicted, because human nature will respond in real time. So for that to happen, you know, we really have to go back to education. And I think it's extremely hard for people who are in business at the moment, because of the construct that they're in, to think about things other than about getting predetermined outcomes, when the very nature of a business, if it stands for something as a platform, and I think, you know, David was right to use that word, you've got a much looser definition of what organization is. To me, it is the act of organizing to make something happen. And what an organization stands for, which is the intangible value of it, is arguably the most potent part of that. So how do we understand how people are interacting dynamically, and how can we empower them to do that? And how can we use that dynamic interactivity to understand where the real value is today? That's a great opportunity for any business strategy. But it's also quite difficult for executives today to adopt, because they're just simply not used to thinking and framing business opportunity in this way.
Definitely excellent contributions and shedding light on all the moving parts. The word dynamic is interesting as a centerpiece, if you will. If you look at the landscape and kind of, I want to say, forecasting the future, where are we going with technology, and where are we going in the transformative digital space? Where do you folks see us in potentially, I'll say, 5, 10, 15 plus years down the road with some of where we are in the journey?
So I can start us out on this one, Sai, if that's okay with everybody. So where I kind of start looking at some of these technologies and how they're enabling better connection and removing some of these silos and enabling more omnidirectional leadership within organizations and online communities. I really try to look at it pretty simply, just in terms of the technologies that we're going to see more of, or that I think will ultimately be more effective, are those that continue to break down the friction of real social connection from one person to another. In other words, the kind of connection that we can have face to face, or that we can even have over a telephone, it's becoming much easier to ignore the technology and not see that as a friction point to connecting with other people more meaningfully. And and insofar as organizations embrace that, I think the changes that are going to thrive, and those organizations that will thrive as a result of implementing these changes, are going to be those that that better understand that socialization process that happens both face-to-face but online as well, where individuals come in, they're acquaintances, they have to adopt some swift trust in order to be productive using these tools and approaches. But those things can quickly move beyond and get to a level of maturity beyond just the work at hand, to encouraging self-disclosure and sharing. And I think the point to which I think David and Anne and all of us are kind of moving towards is humanizing those relations. I think the more likely that a networked anti-fragile organization is to allow for situations where we disclose personal information about ourselves, and I'm not talking about personally identifiable information, I'm talking about sort of sharing loves, hates, things that what's the movie you saw last week, things that are extraneous maybe to the immediate purpose at hand, but that enhance our humanity towards one another. Those are the technologies that we're moving towards further enabling, and really making the digital tools that are enabling organizational transformations, these are becoming more systems of use as opposed to systems of record. This is the place where I go to get things done. This is the place where I go to meet my friends and my peer groups. And it's enabling me to have friendships in the UK or in New Zealand or in China, just as easily as my friend who lives down the street from me. So that's really my look at it at this point.
I'm going to give a hat tip to Halvarian. I bow down at the perspective that he has, actually, because he, for those who aren't aware, he's the chief economist at Google. So in answer to the sort of question, what might happen, he should know. And he put this fantastic quote up, which I actually used in my TEDx talk in Washington, D.C. about reinventing organization. But it sums it all up for me, and I don't think we've begun to get anywhere close to getting to the picture that he paints, which is around the thought that whether it's mining your personal biology or building maps from shared experiences, the ability to take data, understand it, process it, extract value from it, visualize it, communicate it, that's going to be a hugely important skill in the next decades. And I agree. I think that we have to get a lot more jiggy with data. I think we've got to really get under the skin of organizational dynamics and what's going on. We don't need to be afraid of them. When people start to put together data sets that haven't been put together before, you start to get the quantum compound effects of connectivity happening. The strength in a network is where things intersect. It's not on the straight lines. And so we've got to, really feel comfortable mixing up intelligences in ways that we haven't done before, because I think that's a big difference to where we've been. Where we've been has been about old-fashioned brokerage, leverage, gateways, artificial gateways from which people can make and extract profit. What we're talking about now is much more collaborative, mutual value creation. It's not always agreed as being the case. We've seen with the sharing economy that it's still sort of looking at the disproportional benefit within a technical framework. Arguably, that's not necessarily sustainable as we might think. And I'm interested in the sustainable digital model, which I think is also about the sharing economy and everybody as an agent within an organization, however loosely one defines it, making a difference. And so I think using data as the means to that will lead us into hugely exciting territory in the future.
Couple of things from me then. I think we will shift inexorably towards more purpose-led platform organizations. So they'll, you know, organizations, because transparency is becoming a default, will have to live by their purpose and will have to act as if they act in line with what they say they're going to do. That will be the generator of trust. That's going to be the same for employees joining those organizations and why they join those organizations. It's why Google can operate in such a flat way. They have a certain set of purposes and beliefs, and then people are just left to get on heading towards them. They know how to make decisions on a daily basis without referring up the tree because they know what they're trying to achieve together. And that's I think, going to be a model we'll see more and more of. There'll be more strategy-led rather than management-led organizations, so orgs will get judged on their strategy rather than how that strategy is being managed, because the strategy will be in the hands of every member of the organization. Just to bring it around a little bit to anti-fragility, you know, I don't know whether this is a great example or not, but it's in the news, so let's talk about Volkswagen. Had an opportunity, and still do actually, if they want to leapfrog everybody, they could, for example, take a very anti-fragile approach to their testing, one that doesn't involve them just having a one-size-fits-all solution that once you get caught out, you're dead in the water. So let's say instead they were taking data from every one of their cars that is on the road, and they were sharing that data with everyone who wanted it on a daily basis. They would instantly be unbreakable, as no one could go after them for the veracity of their data. It would be honest and accurate and shared widely. But also, that data would be much more useful to many more parts of the organization because it would be accurate in real time, etc. So they'd actually become stronger as a result of this attack. That kind of response is perhaps, because it's very much a networked approach, a networked response, is perhaps an example of how anti-fragility can be played, where you've attacked one point in the organization. That for me, it's this idea of, you know, the old ideas are the best ones. If what doesn't kill me makes me stronger, well, that should mean that multiple nodes erupt when you attack at one point, and they provide the solutions in multiple ways. And, you know, the multiple testing and the multiple sharing that you'd get from VW taking the right response now, going open with its testing, I think would show that it was a sustainable business.
Yeah, I think that link to sustainability, and that's really important. Just to comment on that, David.
Yeah, very good, David and Anne and Todd. This is a fascinating conversation, and we're coming to the part we're going to ask for some closing comments. We have plenty of time. Why don't we go start with Anne, and then we'll go to David and the Todd, and give us sort of what you think the summary of all this is and whatever you'd like to share in the closing comments over the next few minutes.
Well, we have got plenty of examples of industries or businesses within them being upended by you know, what digital business has gotten us to, whether it's banks as dumb pipes or it's Volkswagen, you know, coming asunder because of emissions testing. There's lots and lots of issues around, you know, around DRM, about open, about a number of different things. But I think we're getting enough examples also coming through. I did a lot of work with McMillan Cancer Support, which when we look at back now at the impact of the network, because it is now a network, it's beaten its income target by 50 million 2 years ahead of schedule when we first started that work because of the power of the network. And with examples like that, with 3 or 4 years data behind them, I think we can give more confidence to organizations thinking about how they do reframe what they do, staying true to their core purpose, but being able to have many more parts of the central nervous system which are active to making conscious decisions of the network.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much, Anne. David. What kind of closing comments and thoughts do you have, David?
Yeah, I'll keep it quite simple. I think this all says to me, you get more value from what you share than what you keep. And that is, I think, a lesson that the web shows us. Certainly anyone who played around with the internet early on and seen the generosity of spirit that the web revealed very quickly is becoming part of the DNA of people entering business and now taking serious roles in business. And so there's a natural gravitation towards an attitude of sharing, of giving stuff away in the assumption, the hope that there's more value to be created from doing that and that you'll get some of that.
It's like the boomerang effect. The more you throw it out, the more it comes back to help you. Thank
sure.
you, David. Did you have something else you want to add?
Sorry,
okay, all good. Yeah, let's go to Todd. Todd, what kind of closing comments and thoughts do you have for today?
Yeah, so I guess call out to any of those individuals who listen to this this webinar and are contemplating how to start embarking further on that journey towards digital transformation. You know, part of what organizations need is to identify what that true north value is for them. And in this case, you know, I would say you could do a lot worse than hanging true north on the concept of anti-fragility. If you start thinking about the, you know, the triads that Taleb talks about in his book, where, you know, sort of on the far left is, you know, fragility or the fragility of the individual, things that hate volatility, up through things that are robust, and into the anti-fragile things that love volatility and benefit from those stresses. And he calls it the anti-fragility of the collective. I think that tracks very well with the digital transformation journey. And thinking about, you know, sort of that move from old school command and control, hierarchical leadership, protecting information, siloing it, to, you know, the more robust journey that we've been on over the years through email and company intranets and data warehouses, which are arguably robust, but not as anti-fragile as our social tools, our collaboration practices, organizational transparency, collaborative and consensus-based leadership, and, you know, sharing and collating data from across organizations and outside of organizations. I think that's really kind of something to start looking at and to start judging your digital transformation decisions based on, is this going to make us a more anti-fragile organization? Are we moving away from that fear and desire to control towards something that is still guided? It's not wide open. It's not the American Wild West, but something that is going to allow us to thrive and grow as an organization and remain competitive in a culture and business climate that continues to thrash and evolve, you know, more quickly than anybody realizes. So that would be my closing thought.
Okay, thank you there, Todd. Is there anything else anybody would like to add? You know, either the panelists or Ross or Sai, go ahead.
Excellent. I just want to say this has been a very, very rich and diverse conversation. I know there's a lot of depth that we haven't touched, but by all means, I would encourage folks listening to this and participating today, definitely keep an eye on, by all means, all the panelists as they continue to help us unfold the uncharted territories upon this journey and the anti-fragility that we are all picking up along the way, as well as potentially losing along the way. And definitely thank you, Anne, thank you, David, and thank you so much, Todd, for your contributions all around.
Thank you, Sai.
Okay.
Thank you.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Very good, Sai and Ross, and to Todd and Anne and David, thank you so much for being here today. This completes the Anti-Fragility Social Business and Digital Transformation webinar. We'll look forward to seeing everybody on the next Anti-Fragility webinar. Have a great day, everyone.